Hello, and welcome to Oxtalk on Tuesday, the 23rd of June 2026. My name is Bridget, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Hazel Hobbs and Elizabeth Dale. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Loffel. Before we start, here's some information on how to listen to Oxtalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oxtalk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise and sunset times this week will range from 4:46 on Monday 22nd of June to 4:49 on Sunday 28th of June, and the sunset times this week will range from 21:26 on Monday 22nd of June to 21:27 on Sunday 28th of June.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
An ancient Oxford tradition was set to continue on Friday, June the 19th. Councillor Linda Smith, the recently appointed Sheriff of Oxford, was due to carry out the annual inspection of Port Meadow and its livestock on the Friday as part of her formal responsibilities. The event is a long-standing civic tradition and highlights the city's commitment to conserving one of its most historic and valued green spaces. Before the event, Ms Smith said, "I'm looking forward to taking part in the annual Sheriff's inspection of Port Meadow. It will be nice to keep up the ancient tradition and have some fun during the evening." But the event also represents the responsibility the City Council has for Port Meadow and the care that's taken all year round by our dedicated staff working in various roles for the Council and our wholly owned company, Oxford Direct Services, to look after the meadow for the animals, which call it home, as well as the human visitors. Port Meadow is recorded in the Domesday Book and remains common land owned by Oxford City Council.
Harry Potter star Miriam Margolyes is set to receive an Icon Award despite previous calls to strip her of an OBE. The actress, who was born and grew up in the city, is well known to audiences around the world after starring as Professor Sprout in several of the Harry Potter films. Known for her character actor work across film, television and stage, she received the BAFTA for Best Supporting Actress for her role as Mrs. Mingott in Martin Scorsese's 1993 film, The Age of Innocence. Ms. Margolyes was awarded an OBE in 2002 for services to drama, but there were calls for this to be taken back last year. The 85-year-old, who is Jewish, had spoken to The Big Issue about Israel's military campaign in Gaza. She said that it reminded her of the Holocaust and added, "The terrible thing I face is that Hitler won. He changed us, made us like him." The Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, CAA, has responded to Ms. Margolyes' remarks and labelled them as repugnant. Previously responding to the uproar in comments reported by Edinburgh Live, Ms. Margolyes said, "I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm anti-killing children," she said, as reported by Edinburgh Live. "I am criticising the Israeli government, but I'm also criticising the Jewish people in the UK, the community that I belong to, which is not coming out in support of me. I just want people not to kill each other." Now, Ms. Margolyes is set to be honoured with this year's Rain Dance Icon Award at the Rain Dance Film Festival, which runs in London from June 17th to 26th. The veteran actor will be presented with the prize at the festival's opening gala on June the 17th, following the UK premiere of Michael Perandi's April X. Ms. Margolyes recently appeared in Lee Knight's short, A Friend of Dorothy, which first screened at Rain Dance around a year ago before enjoying a strong festival run that led to an Academy Award nomination for Best Live Action Short. Mr. Knight, who directed the film, will present the new Icon Award in what organisers have dubbed a full circle moment. In A Friend of Dorothy, Margolyes plays a widow whose quiet routine is disrupted when a teenager, played by Alistair Nwakachukwu, accidentally sends his football into her garden, with the pair forming an unexpected friendship built on shared loneliness. Speaking to Variety about Rain Dance Honour, the ever-frank Margolyes said, "I didn't quite believe it. Everybody likes awards, but in my secret heart, I think awards are not good for people because they become smug. I don't want to become smug, and there are so many brilliant performers, and everybody sometimes deserves an award, so it's my turn. I am going to accept it gratefully and hopefully gracefully."
Sanctions placed on Chorwell District Council's planning authority have been branded a Whitehall power grab by a county MP. The council was designated by the government as not adequately performing its function of determining applications for planning permission for major developments. This stripping of power means major developers can go straight to the planning inspectorate, removing them from councillors elected by and accountable to local residents. Major developments include 10 or more homes, a site greater than 0.5 hectares, a building or buildings with floor space of more than 1,000 square metres, or a development on a site which has an area of 1 hectare or more. Callum Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, has condemned the indefinite decision, calling it a centralising power grab that punishes local people for central government failures. He said the government is blaming Chorwell for delays to development caused in large part by national infrastructure failure. Over 11,000 homes already have permission but have not yet been built, too often because the electricity, roads, water and sewage capacity need to support growth has not been delivered. The designation is based on the rate at which the council's decisions on major applications were overturned on appeal. The government cites a figure of 11.2% against a threshold of 10%, but the council's own analysis shows the problem is driven overwhelmingly by one single year, 23 to 2024, when Chorwell was run by a minority Conservative administration. The district council said it is disappointed in the government's decision, stating that it had been working with the Planning Advisory Service to improve performance, increase capacity and strengthen governance. It said, "These improvements are already having a positive impact, with the latest data indicating the council's performance will be under the 10% threshold at the end of the current monitoring period, hence the council's frustration at this designation decision." Leslie McLean, leader of the council, called the decision disappointing and frankly frustrating, but said its focus on serving and listening to the community to deliver homes, jobs and opportunities remains unchanged. She said, "The government appears more interested in judging Chorwell's past performance than recognising the progress being made today. Residents expect major decisions affecting their communities to be shaped by local knowledge and local accountability. This designation creates a route for those decisions to be made by the planning inspectorate outside the local democratic process.
New data shows 75% of speeding tickets handed out in Oxfordshire and from mobile speed camera vans. Thames Valley Police caught 9,823 incidences of speeding in the county for 3 months during the summer between October and December, the newly published figures show. And of those, 7,404 vehicles were caught by somebody sat in a van with a speed gun at the side of the road. The worst area to get caught by a speed camera van is in the West Oxfordshire and Charwell districts of the county, the data suggests, where 3,442 were caught in the 3 months. During the same period in the same districts, fixed speed cameras flashed just 54 times for speeding, the lowest data of the period in Oxfordshire by far. Meanwhile, in Oxford, more offences were clocked by a fixed speed camera than a mobile camera at 1,672 clocked compared with 1,259 caught by a parked van. This was a rise from the previous quarter where fixed cameras flashed 1,433 times and mobile speed vans caught 1,173 vehicles. Over the South Oxfordshire and the Vale of the White Horse District Council areas, fixed speed cameras flashed 693 times, up from 1,162 times the previous quarter, compared with 2,757 speeding offences clocked using a mobile speed camera van. Overall in Oxfordshire, fixed speed cameras flashed 2,419 times during the 3 months of the summer, while mobile speed cameras recorded 7,404 incidences of speeding. The data does not include Community Speedwatch, which over the same 3 months saw volunteers put in 279 hours, resulting in 3,341 letters being sent to motorists. Maria Joliffe, a traffic management officer at Thames Valley Police, said, "We prioritise enforcement and education for drink and drug driving, the non-wearing of seat belts, excessive speed, careless driving and driving whilst distracted." She added, "Community Speed Watch is an educational scheme run by our local volunteers. The figures for the mobile camera enforcement are from our dedicated Safer Roads police staff, and the fixed penalty notices are from any officer on patrol dealing with a motorist. The minimum penalty for speeding is a fixed penalty fine of £100 and 3 points added to your licence. Receiving 12 or more points within 3 years may disqualify you from driving." Newly published provisional government statistics suggest that Oxfordshire is seeing significant improvements in road safety, with serious and fatal collisions falling sharply while the wilder Thames Valley area has seen increases. Tim Bearder, leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said the provisional data is extremely encouraging after the authority vowed to cut road deaths.
Plans for a new Oxfordshire Innovation District on Greenbelt fields have been labelled a betrayal by campaigners amid fear for a tsunami of activity. A planning application for the Exeter Oxford Innovation District has been validated by Charwell District Council, revealing the extent of Exeter College's supercomputer proposals for a 40-hectare green belt site between the Pear Tree Interchange and Kidlington. It includes new laboratories, a data centre, a college, higher education spaces, retail units, a fire station, 45 homes, 1,700 parking spaces and a 180-room hotel. The plans say the site would cost £900 million to build between 2028 and 2040, creating 7,100 jobs and generating £1.4 billion a year once it's completed. The Science Park is planned for Freeze farmland at Freeze Way in Gosford. The proposals say sustainability is at its core, with the planting of woodland, creation of rolling parkland, including two new built hills, wetlands and green roofs, as well as green energy on site and off site, with solar power plants for the provision of the vast amount of electricity required to fuel the data centre. Sustainability had been a concern raised when proposals were first shared with the public ahead of a formal planning application being made. Now, an objection posted on the application describes fears for the level of traffic accessing the site due to the number of parking spaces proposed. Neighbour David Gimson said, "The developers will argue that parking is necessary. They will not face the costs which increased vehicle movements will impose on every other user of the A34 and other surrounding roads. They will not carry the cost to businesses of slower journey times. They will not bear the burdens placed on individuals and families caused by slow, difficult, congested journeys. They will not compensate the NHS for the additional costs imposed by the tsunami of inactivity which threatens to overwhelm it because of our car-centric, sedentary society." Despite the close to 2,000 parking spaces planned across three multi-storey car parks, the proposals say the college is hoping to create a predominantly car-free campus, in part due to its proximity to Oxford Parkway Station. There is also a footbridge planned for the pedestrian and cycle access over the A34. The application confirms the Grade 2 listed Freeze farmhouse will be retained, with the former farmyard resurfaced as a landscape area. The 45 homes proposed would be intended for academics, researchers and staff working within the Innovation District. Plans describe an urgent national need for high-performance computing facilities. It said, "The XOQ will support research and development in many areas requiring significant compute power and data storage capacity, such as climate, advanced materials, particle physics, space and satellite technology, NHS data for drug development, and the development of computer science and AI. A group of golfers, known as Greenway, have called for the refusal of the Science Park proposals. They say the site was earmarked for a replacement golf club after it was uprooted from its historic North Oxford Golf Club site in 2025 amid plans for 1,180 homes. Oxford University, Merton College and Exeter College had owned the previous location of North Oxford Golf Club, and their plans for residential development there led to the club's closure after 118 years. David Young, a golfer and founding member of Greenway, said, "Our golf club was effectively forced off its leased land by its university and college landlords. It was closed in October last year. At the local plan public examination in 2018, the planning inspector was clear the golf course could be allocated for housing on the basis that there was a potential replacement site for golf at Freeze Farm. The Freeze Farm landowner, Exeter College, which also owns part of the golf course site, stated publicly to the planning inspector that it would make the land available if it was needed for a golf course. But, in a fundamental betrayal of good faith, Exeter has now instead put in plans for this massive computing and research complex. The college alleges, falsely in our opinion, that there is no need for the replacement of golf." Freeze Farm is about a mile away from the old golf club site and, according to Greenway, is one of the last few remaining green belt spaces between Kidlington and Oxford. In its planning application, the college included a golf needs assessment. It said, "There is excess supply of golf courses within the catchment area of North Oxford Golf Club, both now and in the period to 2040. Greenway has an independent report from the ORS consultants, which it says refutes this claim on the basis that the course closed with full membership. Charwell has a relatively low number of courses, golf participation is at least stable and probably growing. A spokesperson for the XOQ development noted the local plan had identified the planned Innovation District site for potential construction of a golf course, should this be required as a result of the development of land to the west of Oxford Road. They said, evidence submitted to the ongoing local plan review highlighted that the popularity of golf is declining nationally, and there is insufficient demand locally to justify this site as a replacement course. It's important to note that North Oxford Golf Club members voted to close the site altogether rather than seek to relocate as a club, and distributed a £4.3 million vacant possession premium between themselves. The submission of these plans comes amid a backdrop of uncertainty for the future of planning scrutiny at Chartwell District Council. This application is currently on its planning portal and is open for consultation until July the 18th. However, following a government decision to strip the local authority of its control over major planning decisions, the next steps for the application are unclear and may bypass council scrutiny, heading straight to the government's planning inspectorate.
The site of the illegal waste dump at Kidlington is unrecognisable following progress in its clear-up. Green Councillor Ian Middleton visited the dump to see what progress had been made in the £7.3 million clean-up. Flytippers had spent months depositing around 21,000 tonnes of mixed household and commercial waste on empty land just off the A34 near the River Charwell. Mr. Middleton said the visit was interesting, describing the site now as being unrecognisable from what it was. Charwell District Council has also said the majority of waste has now been cleared in the six-month operation, which started in April. The senior councillor said, "The waste itself was incredibly varied, but largely unrecognisable since it was shredded. Apparently the long stretch has been featured in most drone footage, wasn't the main bulk of it. There was a lot more waste in the wider section, but it has not been covered with soil. They seem to be ahead of schedule, and I think they're hoping to have the bulk of the waste removed within the next few weeks. There's going to be a more focused clear-up with less heavy machinery and some inspection and remediation of the impact on surrounding trees and hedgerows. Many of the trees have been damaged and may need to be removed, which is a real shame. The overhead power cables have been isolated and, given the height of the waste dump itself, it's astounding that the criminals that were dumping it didn't hit them with machinery when they were unloading, which doesn't bear thinking about. The waste removal companies say they will leave the site clear, including removing everything they've brought in. It seemed to be under control and a very efficient and well-run operation. The 150-metre-long trail of rubbish in a field alongside the A34 prompted widespread outrage, a criminal investigation, and was declared a critical incident by the Environment Agency last November. On the criminal investigation, the Environment Agency gave no update on the timeline for when it hoped charges would be brought. Four men, all from out of county, have been arrested and released under investigation as part of the probe. The Environment Agency first attended the scene of the illegal trip in July 2025, issuing a cease and desist letter to stop further tipping. When officers became aware of more dumping in October, the EA applied for and secured a court order to close down the site and said no further waste had been tipped since then.
A city brewery which creates training and jobs for people released from prison has showcased its latest beers at a festival recently. Tap Social's 10 new collaboration beers were showcased at its annual Changes Brewing Indie Beer Festival last weekend. The fifth annual event, hosted by the award-winning Oxford Social Enterprise Brewery, took place at the Taproom Industrial Estate on Saturday, June 6th. Exclusively available from Brewser, the world's first direct-from-brewery subscription service, The Change is Brewing box features tap social collaborations with 10 of the UK's leading independent breweries. Brian Spencer, Tap Social's marketing manager, said, "I couldn't be more proud and excited to partner with Brewser and get these delicious beers in the hands of its members."
More than £1.4 million has been given to private companies from the Oxford Congestion Charge, accounts show. Oxfordshire County Council is expected to generate a £5.2 million surplus from the controversial £5 daily charge to drive through six streets in the city. Roads include Hythe Bridge Street, St Cross Road, St Clement Street, Thames Street, Marston Ferry Road and Hollow Way. Accounts for the County Council have revealed County Hall has spent £1,406,282.80 on the congestion charge to private companies since it was introduced in October. Portsmouth-based Modaxo Traffic Management UK has been given £333,765.32 since the charge's introduction up to the end of March for processing penalty charge notices. Over the same time frame, Exeter-based Unity 5 Limited has been given £93,004.50 for its permit management software. London-based Parking Associates was paid £1,400 in January to provide training for staff in relevant legislation and processes. And the Oxford Bus Company was handed £978,112.98 in reimbursements to fund the free park and ride bus travel offer. 19 separate payments were made to the four companies in a period spanning its introduction to the end of March. Oxfordshire County Council has been asked whether the money spent at the expense of taxpayers or whether the congestion charge incomes cover it. However, no response was given prior to publication. Oxford temporary congestion charge also costed approximately £496,906 to implement and operate. We also reported in October that Oxfordshire County Council spent £73,333.50 on a contract for an online permit system, which is used for the controlled parking zones and the congestion charge. But motorists criticise the online permit system for being confusing and unreliable. The County Council spent less on physical paper permits in the last three financial years, spending £24,504 in 22-23, £26,460 in 23-24, and £24,625 in 24-25. The income generated by the congestion charge is currently being used to fund free park and ride bus travel until mid-August 2026. But last month, the Lib Dem Cabinet agreed to amend the offer for park and ride bus travel in Oxford with the introduction of a £3 combined ticket covering 16 hours parking and return bus travel for up to five people from mid-August until the end of March 2027. It's also a 50p price increase on the Council's current offer. Additional benefits for other groups, including for NHS and school staff working in Oxford, were also agreed. But one of the early benefits of the congestion charge, which the County Council noted, was a 1% increase in pedestrian footfall in Queen Street. Progress at the time, which was dubbed laughable.
An Oxford car retailer is warning that hay fever symptoms behind the wheel can seriously affect road safety. Weyland's Volvo Oxford located on Cumnor Hill, has shared advice for drivers after research revealed the extent to which hay fever can impact driving. The study, commissioned by Volvo, found that drivers in the southeast have experienced symptoms such as sneezing, itchy eyes, fatigue, or reduced concentration while driving, with 91% admitting these symptoms have affected their control of the vehicle. Simon Bishop from Wayland's Volvo Oxford said, "With so many drivers experiencing hay fever symptoms while on the road, it's important motorists recognise the impact this can have on their concentration and comfort behind the wheel." The research also found that 16% of drivers have delayed or avoided journeys on high pollen days, and nearly half believe hay fever is a genuine road safety issue. Mr. Bishop offered three key tips to stay safe behind the wheel during allergy season. Plan journeys for times when pollen counts are lower, keep windows closed and use air conditioning, and regularly clean the interior of the car to reduce pollen build-up. For more information or to speak with the team about vehicles equipped with air purification technology, drivers can contact Wayland's Volvo Oxford on 01865 671 550.
A member of the House of Lords and a national newspaper columnist have demanded tough action to stop the menace of rented bikes and scooters being dumped on pavements in the city. Lord John Krebs, a zoologist and ecologist living in Oxford, said the discarding of used electric cycles on walkways was causing a problem to pedestrians, particularly the elderly and disabled. It comes as the government called on councils to make e-bike hire companies pay for abandoned bikes to be removed from the pavements. Members of the House of Lords also said the government should introduce insurance schemes to cover people hit by illegal e-bikes and e-scooter riders. In particular, Lord Krebs said Oxford was a particularly problem area. He said, "Where I live in Oxford, one of the problems with e-bikes and e-scooters is that all too often they're dumped on the footpath, blocking the way particularly for mothers with prams and pushchairs and for elderly people and the sight impaired. In this context, I note that Kensington and Chelsea Council in the last 18 months have removed over 2,500 illegally parked e-bikes and e-scooters and charged the operators £210,000 for doing so. Does the Minister think that other councils, including Oxfordshire County Council, should follow the lead of Kensington and Chelsea? That particular London council has seized more than 1,200 hire bikes, causing immediate danger of significant obstruction, lying on pavements or roads during 2026. The council has said it charged Lyme, Human Forest, Voir and Bolt a total of £210,098 since January 2025, as it said the bikes cannot come at the expense of safe, accessible streets. Peter Hitchens, author and newspaper columnist, has consistently called for the licensing of e-scooters and e-bikes. He said the e-scooters and e-bikes were an absolute mess and everywhere, and said there has been an experiment for more than 4 years that nobody knows if it has succeeded or not. The writer said the laws in the UK give the councils no powers or control over any area of the bikes or scooters. He said the lack of insurance on the scooters that go very fast means no one is legally obliged to follow the rules and ride them on pavements or on roads, and if any accident does happen, there will be no compensation for anyone hit by one. Mr. Hitchens argued for complete legislation on the bikes, and that the lack of number plates on the bikes or the scooters gives the drivers complete freedom to do whatever they want. Oxford City Councillor Susanna Pressel said, "I get lots of complaints about scooters and e-bikes parked in large numbers so that they block the pavements. When I contact the two firms who supply them, they come quite quickly to pick them up, which is good, but of course we shouldn't have to do this. The County Council's solution is to provide more places where they can be parked so that they won't all be gathered in one or two spots. We'll have to see if this works in view of the fact that the county also wants to allow more bikes and more scooters. They say that they are popular and they clearly help people to move around, which is good use for the users and for the economy. Susan Linnett, branch manager of Enrichability, an Oxfordshire charity providing support to people with a disability to enable them to access leisure, social and learning activities, said, "Poorly parked bikes and scooters can obstruct pavements, creating barriers and trip hazards for wheelchair users, people with visual impairments and those with limited mobility. Their speed and quiet approach can also increase the risk of collisions, making it more difficult for disabled people to travel safely and independently."
Launton Handbell Ringers are celebrating their 75th anniversary with packed concert programme. Formed under the leadership of bell historian and craftsman Fred Sharp, the group gave their first public performance in June 1951 at the Graven Hill Theatre near Bicester. They have since played everywhere from village halls and care homes to national radio, television and royal events. The anniversary concert at Launton Parish Church on the 13th of June drew almost 200 people for an afternoon of live music, history and community celebration, with some bells dating back to 1696, alongside newer additions introduced as recently as 2011. From an original team of just 4 to 6 ringers, Launton Handbell Ringers have grown into a skilled group of 10 members, with some joining as early as October 1955.
An Oxfordshire councillor has demanded a review of the recycling centre booking system, arguing the impact it has on the elderly is too restrictive. Oxfordshire County Council introduced a booking system at all waste centres across the county in January. Anyone visiting a household waste recycling centre must book a slot online before taking their rubbish and show proof of an address when they arrive. Bookings are available up to 2 weeks in advance or 30 minutes prior, subject to availability. To book a slot, visitors have to enter their own details, choose the centre they will be attending, enter the type of waste they're taking, and choose a date and time. Councillor Lee Evans, the councillor for Kingston and Stamford, said in a statement on Facebook, "Next week, alongside Councillor Sally, I'll be proposing a motion at the Vale of the White Horse District Council about the new rules for using tips or household waste recycling centres." Councillor Evans, who voted against the change, said, "Since the new rules were introduced in January, many residents have contacted me with concerns that the system is too complicated, too restrictive, and may create particular difficulties for elderly residents and those who are offline. There are also concerns that the changes could lead to more fly tipping and or more waste going into black bins." However, in a recent study, DEFRA, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, analysed data from 54 local authorities and concluded that there was no evidence of a link between booking systems and fly tipping. Most residents in Oxfordshire agreed the scheme is easier and more arranged, but argued the costs for elderly and disabled people outweigh the benefits. One resident said, "I think it's made it very difficult for seniors to use. This world is forgetting to look after our elderly who might struggle with technology." Another said, "However, I am concerned about access to the booking system. Not everyone is computer literate or wants to use online platforms for various reasons." A spokesperson for Oxfordshire County Council said, "Fly tipping has been closely monitored with district councils. To date, There has not been an observed increase in fly tipping attributable to the updated HWRC services, nor any new trends emerging more generally since these changes were introduced. The Council said the benefits to the booking system include better flow management, better flow of customers, better availability of information, and the prevention of trade waste.
Protests over Tommy Robinson's invitation to the Oxford Union for a debate on Islam culminated in a clash between hundreds of protesters who had to be separated by police. Hundreds of people turned out to protest at the entrances to St Michael's Street on the 17th of June, which had been closed off with fencing for the appearance of the controversial right-wing agitator at the Oxford Union. The ultra-nationalist figure, whose real name is Stephen Yaxley Lennon, was invited by the Debating Society to speak on a motion on whether the West is right to be suspicious of Islam, an invitation which received massive backlash. Oxford City Council, MPs, religious groups and political parties all spoke out against the right-wing activist coming to the city and petitioned the Society to rescind his invitation. His attendance at the Society came just days after Yaxley Lennon was briefly detained at Heathrow Airport under counter-terrorism laws, and weeks after he addressed a crowd in Southampton following the sentences of the murderer of Henry Novak, Vikram Digwa. Actor Lawrence Fox and politician Jacob Rees-Mogg were also invited and attended to speak at the debate. Despite the backlash, Yaxley Lennon was driven into St Michael Street in a white van with its windows blacked out at about 5:20 p.m. before the start of the debate, which was open only to members of the Oxford Union with tickets. Protesters were on the streets hours before his arrival, with a huge turnout for a coalition of anti-racism groups who loudly demonstrated against his attendance at either end of the street. Carol Wing, a member of Oxford Stand Up to Racism and Women Against the Far Right, said, "We're here protesting that the Oxford Union, a debating club for the elite, have invited Tommy Robinson to debate that the West should be suspicious of Islam. Everywhere he goes, he fuels division, he fuels hate. We do not want this in Oxford. We've petitioned and petitioned to have this debate cancelled, and they refused. So we're here the only way we know how, to make a lot of noise, the louder the better." They echoed chants of "whose streets, our streets, this is what community looks like, and Nazi scum off our streets." Lawrence Fox, best known for his appearance in the Oxford set Inspector Morse sequel Lewis, confronted protesters. A smaller group of supporters of Tommy Robinson, numbering only about a dozen people, also demonstrated in Bond Square, waving English and Union flags, before making their way down Queen Street and Cornmarket Street. Among them was Jack, who did not want to share his last name, and said, "I'm standing here today due to recent events. There's a two-tier society that victimises native British people. We want equality under the law. Why shouldn't Tommy Robinson speak under freedom of speech? He's standing up to the system." Dozens of police officers ran to block the meeting between the two crowds as they approached each other outside Clarendon House, forming a line between the groups to prevent them interacting. Organiser of the Stand Up to Racism protest, Tiege, rallied the crowd's chants through a megaphone. He said, "Fascism is on the rise. Tommy Robinson is not here to have a political debate. He was at the centre of pogroms in Belfast and Southampton and Glasgow. And that's his aim. The safety of our community is not up for debate."
An overhaul of how Oxfordshire councils are run could soon reshape local government and the services residents rely on. Councils across the county are preparing for a major restructure, with a government announcement on the future shape of local government expected in July. The plans stem from the government's consultation on local government reorganisation, LGR, which closed in late March and explored new models for council structures in areas with the county and district format. Three unitary authority options are on the table, each proposing a different way to streamline services and reduce duplication. Council leaders and chief executives from the affected areas issued a joint statement outlining their approach. They said, "Since the start of the year, colleagues across Oxfordshire and West Berkshire councils have been working together within a joint programme to prepare for what comes next. Following the statutory consultation, we have been collaborating to gather a variety of data and information so we are ready to move forward, whichever option gets the go-ahead from the government. We are also thinking through the potential implications of each option, planning for how we would deliver services under the one, two, or three new unitary councils to ensure we are ready to support our communities and colleagues through the changes ahead. Whatever change government proposes, our priority is to make sure we continue to deliver high quality services to the people we serve during transition and beyond." The government is expected to make its provisional minded to decision before the parliamentary summer recess. Detailed legal and operational planning will follow once that announcement is made, with further steps expected to be laid out later in 2026. One option would establish a single Oxfordshire council responsible for all services, while another proposes two unitary councils, Oxford and Shires Council, Cherwell, Oxford City, West Oxfordshire, and Ridgeway Council, South Oxfordshire, Vale of Whitehorse and West Berkshire. A third option suggests three councils. Greater Oxford Council will cover Oxford and its immediate surroundings. Northern Oxfordshire Council would cover most of the existing Cherwell and West Oxfordshire districts. Ridgeway Council would cover most of the existing South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse districts, combined with West Berkshire. Under any scenario, the LGR aims to create simpler, more cost-effective governance by bringing all services under one council per area. If approved, the process would include the election of shadow authorities in May 2027, leading to the new council or councils coming into existence on April 1, 2028.
A new plan aims to improve support for children and young people with special educational needs and disabilities, or SEND. Oxfordshire County Council's SEND reform proposals were discussed by its cabinet on Tuesday, June 16th. They include expanding inclusion in mainstream schools, boosting recruitment of educational psychologists and therapists, and creating inclusion support bases. Sean Gall, the Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Education and Young People Services, said, "Every child deserves an opportunity to thrive, whatever their circumstances, and this plan sets out how we will deliver better, more inclusive support for children and young people with SEND. We're working closely with partners and with families, children and young people who are at the heart of the SEND system." Ofsted has previously recognised recent improvements in Oxfordshire's SEND services, including better joint commissioning and reduced waiting times. The plan has been developed in consultation with health partners, schools and the Oxfordshire Parent Carer Forum, and focuses on early intervention, universal and targeted support and improved outcomes. If approved, the council will receive a high needs stability grant, potentially covering up to 90% of its dedicated schools grant deficit. Mr. Gall said, "It's a vital step towards improving outcomes while making sure our services are sustainable for the future."
Plans for a new laboratories complex at the Harwell Science Campus have been backed by a Didcot District Councillor for supporting the town and wider area. The new five-storey labs facility at the Harwell Science and Innovation Campus will lead to 410 roles being relocated if proposals are approved. According to proposals submitted by the Science and Technology Facilities Council, some Ageing accommodation is approaching the end of its operational life at the 710-acre campus near Didcot and will be set for decommission if a new building is approved. Plans say approving the building would facilitate a relocation, consolidating dispersed inefficient buildings into a single hub to ensure scientific activities undertaken at Rutherford Appleton Laboratory can continue without interruption in a facility designed for modern research standards. Didcot South District Councillor Mocky Khan said he welcomed the proposed investment in the new building for the Didcot area. He added, "Upgrading buildings at the Harwell campus in this way is good news for the area as a whole, which is known as Science Vale UK, for its major science centres at Harwell and Cullum campuses. This kind of investment supports people in Didcot and the surrounding area because it helps to secure jobs and boost the reputation of Harwell as a science hub, making it a more attractive location for prospective businesses. There are about 5,000 staff working at the campus on projects for its £1 billion science infrastructure. The plan said the facility is a critical enabler in decanting staff, laboratories, equipment and infrastructure from existing buildings that have reached the end of their operational life. Those facilities currently house nationally significant scientific research and infrastructure, which must be retained and enhanced to maintain the UK's international standing in this field. The proposed laboratories complex would be on campus grounds on a plot where a previous building was demolished to facilitate this new project. The proposal added, "The building design has been carefully developed to maximise efficiency and reduce the impact on the surrounding site by building located with other large buildings, for example, the adjacent Rosalind Franklin Institute. A basement has been incorporated to increase usable space within the building footprint. If added that the primary objective of the plan was to design, construct and commission an energy-efficient, environmentally sustainable and high-performance state-of-the-art science and technology research centre. Before the planning application was submitted to Vale of Whitehorse District Council, there were concerns raised that there would not be enough parking at the site. The proposal will not be adding more parking than three disabled spaces, as no additional staff will be employed at the campus following occupation of the proposed building. There will be public art added to the campus to meet a planning condition for the new building. A consultation is underway and remains open until June the 24th.
Thames Valley Police are inviting residents in West Oxfordshire to meet their neighbourhood officers at community events this summer. The Woodstock policing team will be attending local school fetes, Chipping Norton Pride Festival and the Wilderness Festival as part of their summer engagement programme. In a post online, Thames Valley Police West Oxfordshire said, "These are great opportunities to have a chat, raise any concerns and learn more about the work we're doing in your area." Officers will be at Hanborough Manor School and Middle Barton School fetes on July the 3rd and 6th and Enstone School fete on July the 11th. Jeremy Clarkson has been supported by Piers Morgan after revealing his cancer diagnosis. The former Top Gear host shared the news in the latest episode of the fifth season of his series Clarkson's Farm, saying the disease is aggressive but it had been discovered early. "I've got cancer," Mr. Clarkson told farm manager Caleb Cooper and land agent Charlie Ireland during discussions about harvest planning at the Chipping Norton farm. The TV presenter said he expected to be fine but would be out of action for a while, before revealing in the final episode that he had undergone an operation to remove part of his prostate. The 66-year-old famously had a feud with fellow journalist Piers Morgan before settling it over a pint a few years ago. Talking to social media, Mr. Morgan revealed he had a cryptic message from Mr. Clarkson at around Christmas last year, praising him for his work on promoting prostate cancer testing. Mr. Morgan said on social media, "I was surprised when Jeremy texted me on Boxing Day, a few days after this picture was taken, to say how much he liked my Paddy Power ad urging men to get tested for prostate cancer. Now I understand. I wish my old sparring partner all the best with his treatment. Guys, have a PSA test. It may save your life." Former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak also offered his support for Mr. Clarkson, saying he's very sorry to hear of the diagnosis. Mr. Sunak, who appeared in Series 4 of Clarkson's Farm while PM, said, "Wishing Jeremy Clarkson a full and speedy recovery. This cancer affects far too many men, and early diagnosis can make all the difference." Following the episode's release, charity Prostate Cancer UK thanked Mr. Clarkson for sharing his diagnosis and treatment on the Prime Video programme, saying it would raise vital awareness. Chiara De Bias, the charity's fundraising and health strategy director, said, "Thankfully, he found the disease at an early stage, but sadly, this is still not the experience of many men across the UK. Over 10,000 dads, brothers, sons and friends are diagnosed too late for a cure every year. And today the responsibility to know if you're a higher risk and to act on it rests entirely on men's shoulders. This must change. The government took an important step forward recently in doubling its support for Prostate Cancer UK's Transform screening trial, allowing us to reach tens of thousands more black men and generate the vital evidence to ensure those at highest risk are diagnosed earlier. In years to come, the trial will find the safest and most effective way to screen all men for prostate cancer, but right now, prostate cancer remains the most common cancer without a screening programme." A multi-award-winning RHS Chelsea Flower Show designer has been made an MBE in the King's Birthday Honours. Sarah Eberle said she's deeply honoured and quietly humbled to be recognised for her services to horticulture. The Whitney Garden designer, one of the most decorated in RHS history, has spent more than 50 years in the industry. News of the honour broke while she was at this year's show. She said, "It was completely out of the blue and a real excitement. When I do Chelsea, I'm not focused on anything else, so when the email came in, I had to look again to check I wasn't imagining it." Miss Eberle, famed for bold, immersive show gardens, feels like she has never worked a day. "I love imparting my passion and helping people, almost showing off," she said. She spoke of her relationship with the outdoors, which has not been without challenges. "Even severe allergies, including a spell in hospital after pollen lodged in her lungs at Chelsea, have not kept her away from the showground. It doesn't stop me," she said. Ms. Eberle went straight into landscape architecture after school, studying environmental subjects at A-level before training for 5 years at what is now the University of Greenwich. After early corporate work in urban landscapes, she set up on her own in the south and fell into garden design because it gave her the creative freedom she craved. Over the decades, she's worked with everyone from Oxfordshire families to royalty and celebrities, including a commission in Monaco in 2011. She jokes that gardening is seriously addictive and can be seriously expensive, but insists it remains one of the few passions with no social boundaries. She says she's been fortunate to work with extraordinary people who share a belief in the power of plants and places to connect us, restore us, and tell stories over time. Ms. Eberle hopes the honour will spotlight the role horticulture can play in tackling climate change and biodiversity loss, and added, "I take this as encouragement to continue observing closely, working thoughtfully, and helping create gardens that feel rooted and resonant for those who experience them." She wants more people to see planting as a powerful, everyday way to protect wildlife, care for their well-being, and shape the landscapes future generations will inherit. Nature is so connected to mental health and well-being that I'm almost driven to show how gardens and landscape should be an intrinsic part of people's worlds, she said. A 600-mile cycling journey has raised thousands of pounds for serving personnel, veterans and their families. Abingdon Extreme Fundraisers completed the six-day round trip from Abingdon to Dunkirk and back in support of the SSAFA, the Armed Forces charity. The challenge raised more than £6,000 to help serving personnel, veterans and their families. Ian Talbot, branch chair for SSAFA Oxfordshire, said, "We're incredibly grateful to the Abingdon Extreme Fundraisers for their commitment, resilience and support. Completing more than 600 miles for the armed forces community is a truly remarkable achievement."
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377635. That's 01865 377635. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skills. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.